Maybe some of you will remember these devices. Back in the day, we used to call these hard disks. And this is the part of a computer that stores the data. Well, this is an open version of the hard disk where you can actually see the platters. That's important because these drives would be used in a way where ones and zeros, so basically the data would be written onto the disk that you see in the image as magnetic dots. With the bare eye, you wouldn't be able to see it, but physically, there would be ones and zeros on the disk that I could read. So if you put that in perspective, you would have a platter, and I would be able to tell you that every dot represents a piece of the data, and I could tell you where it is. So if I copy the data, if I make a forensic copy, a physical extraction, so to say, from the disk, I could replicate every one and every zero to the exact same spot on a different hard drive, and I would have a physical copy or a physical extraction from the device. Now that's no longer the case. Now, why is that? Basically, what you have in your pocket is a phone, and that's a very small computer. So these disks are too big. The technology is getting old. We still use it, but not in our mobile devices. In our mobile devices, we use storage that looks more like computer chips. You see in the right two examples, we have solid state drives, a flash memory. If you talk about like USB drives or SD cards, it's all the same technology, it's just represented in a different way. One of the main caveats in using this kind of storage device is that these computer chips wear down after some time. The big platters that you see on the left, they also break down, but not as fast as the chips you see on the right. Chips on the right contain very, very small transistors, and the more often you use them, the faster they break down, which means that these devices are programmed in a way to not store ones and zeros sequentially as you would have on a disk, but they rotate the usage over all the transistors within the chip. Now, I know it's a bit technical, but bear with me. So if I make a copy from one of the newer devices, can I still speak of a physical copy? No, because the ones and zeros on disk one cannot be represented on exactly the same location on disk two once I make a copy of it. So basically, physical will start to become less physical. Now, how do computers work with this? Computers are devices, and we in the IT were kind of lazy because once we figured something out, we don't like to change that. So also for computers, once we figured out how we made a computer read data from a disk, we didn't want to change that. That had a lot of implications. So once we added new types of storage devices, we added a virtual layer for accessing the storage. How does that work? Let's say you have one of your programs open, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and you want to access a device, a file on the device. Now, if your computer contains an SSD drive, it no longer has those platters, but your computer still thinks it has. So the computer will ask a virtual layer, give me the file that is located on these platters. That virtual layer will then translate the request into a request that actually matches the physical layer and then get the data that you want. If you go deeper, and we talked about making a forensic copy of that data, we also have to go through the same layer. As I mentioned, the same ones and zeros are no longer at the same location. So we as a forensic investigator, once we make an extraction, we need to ask the virtual layer to provide us the data that resembles the physical data. This does mean that if you make a physical copy, Actually, you can't still say you're making a physical copy, but we're still talking about exactly the same ones and zeros and exactly the same sequence. So we tend to still talk about it as a physical copy. But how does this relate to the encryption, which we talked about earlier? Now, as I said, we can't change a lot about how a computer actually accesses the data. So if we want to add encryption to a computer, we have to add an extra layer. Now, again, how does this work? The computer wants to access a file. It will ask the virtual layer please give me the file. Then the virtual layer will talk to the encryption layer, just being a piece of software, by the way. And the encryption layer, if it has the correct key to access and decrypt data, it will ask the physical hard drive for the data. It will then again decrypt the data, present it to the virtual layer, and the virtual layer will present it to the user. As I mentioned earlier, the encryption layer needs a key. And for all types of encryption, you need a key, but where is that key stored? That key is stored in, commonly stored in two places. One is called the Trusted Platform Module, which is a chip within the computer that stores a part of the key. Now, with my user password, I unlock that chip, and once the encryption layer needs to access the data, it will ask the chip, are you unlocked? Yes, then please provide me with the key to encrypt this data. In mobile devices, we tend to talk about the security enclave with this same principle. It's a chip located on the device. It is, however, important to remember that if this technology is in place, once I start making a forensic copy, I need the entire device. I need the chip that contains the encryption keys plus the password to unlock the chip to make a forensic copy. Again, we're still speaking about a physical copy now, because every time I request the data from the physical and encryption layer, I'm presented with the same sequence of ones and zeros as if I was talking to a physical hard drive. Now, the thing that we have in our pocket, I also mentioned this earlier, is just a small computer. We're talking about mobile devices, but we're still applying the same principles that we would do as if we were talking to with a normal computer. Your Android or iPhone device is just a computer with a central processing unit and storage. The only thing is that the operating system is called not Windows or Linux, but it's called Android or Apple iOS. And fun fact, Android is based on the Linux operating system, which is used on desktops quite a lot. Now, if mobile devices were just simple computers, then doing extractions wouldn't be that much of a hassle. Because we are used to storing all our personal data on these devices, they are protected way better than normal computers. At least they're protected better from misuse by its own user. Did you ever try to access your file explorer on your normal computer and try to browse through your files at like an iPhone? At an iPhone, yeah, of course you can access some files. However, it looks and feels differently, and that's because added layers of security are added to the mobile devices in case you lose your device, in case it gets stolen, in case you lose your PIN code. The user needs to be protected against itself. At least that's what the vendors talk about. Another thing is that all vendors would like to add more user-friendly usability to their devices. I'm going to skip through this one. So one of the important things, the key takeaways from this this part is, as soon as we start using especially mobile devices, data from the storage, the actual location of where the data is stored is lost. You move through a lot of layers. And once you reach the presentation layer and the data is actually presented to the user, the user can actually no longer say, this data is from my local device. Why not? Because data is stored on multiple places on mobile devices. Some devices allow you to add SD cards for extra storage, or we add SIM cards to the to mobile devices for extra functionality, like being able to make a phone call or store extra photos. Now, once I start opening photos on my mobile device, you won't notice the difference if the photo is stored on the SD card or the local storage, or if the data is stored within a cloud provider. And cloud providers pose some extra difficulties, because I'm still using this image because it's important to realize that we're still using the same layers. A user is asking for some data at a virtual level, it then gets decrypted, or then gets asked at the encryption layer. But the physical layer can contain several sources. To the user, there's no difference. If you go to the next slide, I will follow through the whole process of how data is presented to the user. Let's say I open my my Photos app, my gallery, and I'm asking my device, give me some image, some holiday image. Well, as we said earlier, we will move through all the layers and say that the image is stored within my Google Photos or Google Drive app. Well, the photo is then requested at the Google Drive app. It's then checked against the local storage, decrypted, of course. And if the data is found on the device, it'll follow the same path back up to the virtual layer, and then the user is presented with any image that it asked. However, that is if the data is actually located on the physical device. Now, let's say that this photo is no longer on the physical device, because services like Google and Microsoft and others, they do realize that people's phones get full. So some of the data is stored within within the cloud, within the servers of Microsoft, or Google, or Amazon. But the same thing happens. The user will ask for a picture, gets translated to the encryption and the virtual layer, then asks at the cloud providers, please provide me with the image, checks the local storage, but then the answer comes back, no, we don't have that image locally. The same process goes, but then the application will ask the cloud provider, hi, can I have this and this picture for this user? If it's available, it'll get decrypted, sent to the Google Drive, and then back to the user. The user itself will not notice that the data is actually collected from the internet. It's to the user, to anyone holding the phone, it's just me opening opening an image. The slide will change. Ah, here we go. Same thing goes for apps. We all know WhatsApp, and I also included a few key players like Telegram and Signal. Again, the same principle applies. The user asks for, please give me this message, please show me this image, please show me this group content. And the device will make the decision if the data is collected from the internet or from the cloud and represented to the user in a unified way. Now, the difficult part is, we all know that the data is transferred in an encrypted way. That's one of the first slides, but it's basically common knowledge also to users that data is often sent encrypted. One key thing is that data might not be sent encrypted or stored encrypted by all applications on the device. Let's see, what's my next slide? Oh yeah. Now, if you noticed, I did try to refrain from using the word file in my presentation, because a lot of data is no longer stored in files. But if you're talking about making an extraction from a mobile device, we always talk about a copy of the files located at within the device. But messages aren't files. Images are often not even files. They're blobs of data that are represented at several locations. So when we start talking about doing a logical extraction, we basically start asking the device at the top level, at the presentation level, for all its data, and if we can actually access it, if it's located on the device, and if we can decrypt it, then we can make a copy of it. We can no longer say, oh, for sure, okay, this part of the device is, or this part of the data is stored on the SD card, this part is stored on within the cloud, or this is actually stored in the SIM card. Let's see. So this poses some challenges. To recap, often data is lost. The user is no longer able to access certain parts of the system, so a forensic investigator is also not able to access all parts of the underlying system. We do have tools to guide us in these extractions. We have closed and open source tools. One of the problems is that we, if you look at open source tools, they often can't keep up with the development speed that the big companies like Google and Microsoft and Apple do. For example, I don't know if it's very readable, but in the I added an image of the iPhone extraction module for autopsy. It's an open source forensic tool. The last time it was updated was 3 years ago, and no one can force a provider of open source software to pick up the pace. The only thing you can do is use the code and add to it yourself. But if the maintainer was no longer maintaining it, basically you can't use the tool. So you're stuck with tools like, let's not mention the names, but the big companies that provide you with capabilities of pulling out the extraction. I did promise I would refrain from any legal question, but the only big question with this is, if I, as a forensic investigator, hold the device, in the Netherlands, we have procedures to put the phone in a Faraday bag or put it in airplane mode to prevent any connections to the internet before we do any investigation. But are we allowed to retrieve data from the cloud? Or are we allowed to retrieve data that is not on the device, seeing that the user would not be able to see the difference between the types of data? In summary, when handling mobile devices, a key point to remember is access to the physical storage is restricted, both by encryption, both by the makers of the operating system. Encryption adds additional layers of virtual access, so physical copies are actually a thing of the past. The data location is not always known by the user, and sometimes not even known by the investigator, because data is always presented in like a uniform way to the user of the device.